And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to the Big Lebowski Isn't As Good As You Remember It podcast.
Oh my God.
Where we will be discussing my first viewing of the Big Lebowski. Plus, less importantly, we will be getting into our 2021 season predictions, Luke.
I had no idea that you even watched this movie. Like, I kind of forgot about this bit.
I didn't, because once I said that,
okay,
I bet you I had 15 to 20 people on Twitter and Gopher Illustrated outraged that I had never seen The Big Lebowski, including you.
Can we just fill in the backstory for those that missed the previous episode? Ryan is joining a bowling league. He asked me who I thought what he would look like as a bowler, or how I envisioned him as a bowler. And I tried to describe Walter Sobchak. Now, Ryan did not get that reference because he had never seen the movie The Big Lebowski. And now he has seen the movie The Big Lebowski. And Ryan, for you, I just have to know, did I nail it on the head with what I envisioned you as a bowler? Are you the Walter Sobchak?
I cannot wait to hopefully dress like that. You know what I appreciate is how seriously, but not seriously, they all took bowling, except for your guy, Jesus.
The dude?
First of all, the dude. No, I'm talking about the guy in the paint, or the purple, that guy,
yeah.
The child predator dude, not the dude. But, you know, I texted Luke once I finished it this weekend. I watched it with my better half. I
totally forgot about this.
And her dad. And I was just like, what did I just watch? Because there was no resolution to anything. He'd never got his freaking rug back. I mean, I know that's just Ryan, my opinion or whatever, but
Ryan, this is the bit of the movie. The dude abides, man. Like, whatever.
The dude does abide. Like, there were so many plots that just never, like, was it funny? Yes. Like, I laughed, certainly, but I was also like, at many points, Liz had never seen it either. And I was just like, what are we watching? Like, what? Like, this poor man just wants to go back to, like, his sad apartment and not get his face beat in, or, like, taken somewhere and just, I don't know. You're like, was it funny? Yes. Is it as good as you remember? Sure isn't. I can tell you that. So, I mean, if there's any other random cult classic movies you guys want me to give my awful takes on, Gopher Illustrated people, you're the paying members. I'll do whatever you want of me.
this is amazing. Okay, thank you, Ryan. That was really good.
Walter Sobchak, by the way. And yeah. I was so sad when Donnie died. And if, by the way, anybody tells me spoilers, this movie came out when I was like 6 years old. I'm 29 now. You've had 23 years to see it. I don't understand why, like, so they have that big fight in the parking lot or whatever. Not even really a fight, but just like Donnie, just like, what happened to Donnie? Oh, dies of a heart attack. Excuse me? Like, what? Like, after all that, my goodness.
We're a Gopher football podcast, not a breaking down movies podcast, but that was really fun for me. Sorry for all the people that had to endure that. For this episode, Ryan, we do want to preview the fact that the Goal Line Club has their tailgates back. I want to first and foremost remind people that remember to renew your Goal Line Club membership, because we understand that a bunch of people still need to do that. And first of all, if you are planning and you are a season ticket holder and you need a tailgate spot and don't have one, you can be a tailgate season pass member for $250. Additionally, space is limited, folks. The Ohio State tailgate it's going to be beautiful out. For those of you that, you know, are anti-maskers and whatever, there is a patio outside. You can be outside because you have to wear a mask inside. Just for the record, please wear a mask. Please get vaccinated. I'm sure we're going to lose listeners for that statement, but just all that said, join the tailgate. It's going to be fun. GoalLineClub.org. Ryan, I should make the majority of these. Come over, say hi, wear your mask.
At every single one. Yeah. And so, like Luke said, I think it's actually 270. It's like 275.
$275 for a season. Yeah, for a member. You have to be a member for a season. Yep.
Yep. or each individual tailgate. If you're a member, it's $50, and if you're not a member, it's $75. And you're like, mm-hmm. $75 for a tailgate. It's unlimited booze and unlimited food, so you can get incredibly happy after a couple 7, 8, 9 beverages of your choice.
There could be a bit in this, Ryan, where people tweet at the Goal Line Club to figure out what their cost per beverage or, you know, their total cost for attending.
If you get there when it opens, if you get there when it opens and you're there 3 hours or something, you could put back 5, 6 if you want, and you can eat all the Tony's Diner that you remember from your college days, and then you can end it off with some insomnia cookies. So plus we'll be there, Luke. I mean, I will be there in 9 days, and I can assure you I'll be the guy with the ugly face for radio. I'll be 6'4", and Luke will be the 6'1" ginger next to me.
Jeez Louise. Always short.
I love to. Always short.
All right. So let's get into, before we get into the season preview and kind of, you know, predicting the outcomes of these games, doing our best prognosticating that we can. I've done a little bit of research this year. I feel proud of myself. But first of all, I got to know what's happening with Gopher injuries before I make these final picks, Ryan. So obviously Chris Ottman-Bell is the most important one of note of late. I did see that Flex says that he went from week to week to day to day. I don't believe PJ Fleck when he says anything about injuries. That's me personally. I don't know where the majority of our listeners and maybe even where you stand on that, but I'm not saying he's not coming back. I'm also not saying that he is coming back. I just don't believe what he says when it comes to injuries, period. So I don't put a lot of stock into it. What about other injuries, Ryan?
Well, we don't know anything more because media hasn't been at practice. They're not allowed to practice. That's where I was. It was funny. I was messaging with our Wisconsin guy, Evan Flood, and I was like, how many practices did you actually get to go to this fall camp? He got to go to 8 full practices. And I was like, are you kidding me? I got 2.5. And it's just difference of opinion in terms of if media matters or not, in terms of giving away the secrets, apparently. But I'm getting sidetracked here. So, yeah, the full quote from Fleck on Ottman-Bell from yesterday would be, he's kind of moved from week to week to day to day. But I think the important part here is the next part of the quote is, we're excited about the progress he's making, but we're going to do what's best for Chris first. We're going to make sure he's healthy enough to do whatever, whether that's practice reps or playing in a game. We'll take him one day at a time. Essentially, we know nothing. And I will state again, I would be surprised to see Ottman-Bell out there in a significant capacity against Ohio State. But we will see how he continues to progress with that injury, which I do believe is an ankle injury, over the next, 9 days until kickoff. So a lot can happen between now and then. I'm just telling you, we get Fleck again on Friday. We'll ask him again on Friday. He will tell us nothing new, and we won't know anything until the opener. Trying to get injury news in terms of from sources, from this staff, Fleck refuses in terms of, like, his staff knows, whether it's the coaches or the people behind the scenes, they know, like, you don't give out injury information. Now, if I find that out, you know, there's going to be hell to pay. So I've stated my opinion there. I mean, we don't know anything more on like Arianta Arisuri or anything like that. So we'll see. But again, Luke, I was texting and messaging with you before this because I'm writing my official season preview article, which I think is going to go live tomorrow.
Yeah, and we
I don't
we
know what talk, I'm going to do here.
We actually talk in text more than people know, and I understand that people think I don't know anything about football, which could be accurate, right? But I have told you and talked to you into Northwestern losses for the Gophers way too many times, and I just want to make sure I never bet against Fitzy. Never.
I would tell you, I don't know that that's a smart bet. This year, because we'll get to Northwestern and sweet Moses of Mary, do they lose everything in the kitchen sink?
Right.
So it's like I said, I'm like 60-65% of the way through my official for like research I've done.
Yeah.
But I know, shocker, the Gopher Football Podcast guys are probably going to pick the over for 7 wins. By the way, I saw a 6.5 number today. 6.5 wins for Minnesota.
For Minnesota? I take the over on that.
I need to send you that link because I refuse to bet on the Gophers and just college football essentially in general.
Yeah.
Can you leverage your mortgage on that 6.5 over bet for me, please?
So I
absolutely please.
I don't. I'm probably not going to bet my mortgage on it. But here's the thing.
If you can find 6.5, for the record, I would do the mortgage on the over, but Luke certainly would not.
Have I ever told you the story about when the University of Washington was playing Miami and they were 28-point underdogs? This was during like the Willis McGahee, whatever. We were out visiting family out in the greater Pacific Northwest. Somebody calls into the radio and said that he bet his mortgage on Washington covering that game. Ryan. Miami won by like 42.
That's why I don't.
This is why I don't
football, Luke.
I don't bet.
I don't bet games, I think there's a slight edge if you know what you're doing in terms of like win loss over unders. I think you can be plus EV, but
okay.
I just 6.5 for me on a book that I saw. Actually, I saw the article. Was written on the 21st, and I was like, wherever you could find 6.5, we can get into it here. So
yeah, okay, so let's do get into that. And what I'd really like to do, Ryan, is hopefully by the end of this we can have a floor and a ceiling for the Gophers as well, not just a pick. I'd like to get a floor and a ceiling as well. Okay, so just to start, we're going to start with Ohio State. Ohio State comes into Huntington Bank Stadium as the number 4 team in the country. I guess that technically could change next week, but right now they are number 4 in the country. They are replacing a quarterback, and they are reloading in a lot of areas, Ryan. This is a team that has super high expectations. They are expected to once again win the Big Ten. I don't think there's any question there. Ryan Day, as you said numerous times, he does not recruit. He selects. And again, he will be retooling with selected players and arguably the best wide receiver crew in the entire country, maybe largely in college football in the last, I don't know how long. So it's going to be an interesting test for the Gophers. They're definitely going to be underdogs, as we know. How do you see this one playing out?
You know, you mentioned it. Ohio State doesn't rebuild. They just reload.
Right.
And that's the building of not recruiting, selecting. And that's the benefit of wearing the crimson and gray of Ohio State. Now, Ohio State loses Justin Fields to the NFL. He's probably going to be a starter for the Bears here very soon. And that's where you're going to be seeing C.J. Stroud getting his first career start in Huntington Bank Stadium, of which, by the way, drove by the stadium yesterday. And it saying Huntington Bank on the outside is very strange.
Kind of cringeworthy.
It is kind of cringeworthy, but welcome to mergers in 2021, right, Luke?
M&A, man. M&A.
Yeah. This essentially comes down to, do you think Minnesota's secondary has a pulse of stopping what I think is the best receiving core in college football, led by Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson? I mean, to beat Ohio State, you have to outscore Ohio State. And essentially, if you think Minnesota can score 35-plus points in this game, which if you do, I would encourage you to hit the over on this game, because I think the over on this game is somewhere around 62. And if that's going to happen, if Minnesota's scoring 30, I can assure you Ohio State is scoring 30. But I don't know. I don't think Minnesota wins this game. I mean, I think Olave and Wilson are too much. Again, if you want to play Mr. Positivity, you're going to say Fleck trestle balls Ohio State, which would be the ultimate revenge narrative. In terms of Minnesota, just has like 3 drives of 12 plays that go 9 minutes that result in touchdowns, because Ohio State's offense can't score if they're not on the field. Now, Ohio State's defense, they lost their, I think their top 4 linebackers. And I remember back to the first game last year, Luke, for Minnesota. Do you remember what Michigan did against Minnesota's inexperienced linebackers?
Yeah, it was not pretty.
It was motion and misdirection that got them leaning one way, coming back another, and long, long touchdown runs for Michigan. So I hope that we see Mike Sanford implement some motion and misdirection to try and get those brand new linebackers going. But again, Ohio State's D-line is really good. Ohio State's a really good football team. It's why many people think they are a national title contender. I just don't think Minnesota has the horses, especially if Ottman Bell is limited, if not active, to really compete with Ohio State with this passing game. So I think Ohio State wins this game and the Gophers start the year 0-1. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll take Ohio State in this one. I know that, you know, obviously they're starting a new quarterback who hasn't started before. They're just going to be as good as the Gophers are going to see. I think it's very likely that Ohio State is in the playoff once again, maybe even vying for a national championship once again. I'm not going to at this point bet against Ryan Day until someone proves me otherwise. He has had a ton of success there. I know Urban Meyer before him had a ton of success, but the reality of the situation is they're just really good, and they run good systems, and they get the best players, and it's hard to bet against that any day of the week. So,
I mean, we would both love to be wrong in 9 days.
For sure.
I think the atmosphere is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
For that first game, but let's move on to game number two, Luke.
Okay, so game number two, September 11th and 11 a.m. kickoff. Again, Huntington Bank Stadium. This is one of the rare games where we know what channel it's going to be on. It's going to be on ESPNU. This is going to be Miami of Ohio. This is the alma mater of Ben Roethlisberger. Frankly speaking, I don't think anybody has high expectations for Miami, Ohio. I've actually been trying to look. At one point, I did find their over-under win total, and I'm trying to find it now. At this point, you know, I think this is a bounce-back game.
Go ahead. Yeah, I think they were picked like third in the MAC East. But yeah. They were in a conglomerate with two other teams there, so they could finish apparently anywhere between second and fourth.
Yeah, like they're not going to be bad, but they're also not going to be amazing. But, you know, it's going to be a solid squad, and it's still a good test. The Gophers are going to have to show their ability to row the boat and bounce back. So I'll still take Minnesota in this game. That said, if they lose this game, I have big concerns going forward for the Gophers.
I mean, anytime you lose to a MAC team, I hope you have major concerns about the season. But, I mean, Miami of Ohio is a fine MAC team. I don't think they're a great MAC team. I don't think they're Bowling Green, who we'll get to in a couple games.
Right.
But I think they're fine. Now, the nice thing for Minnesota here is Miami of Ohio doesn't get a cupcake before. And you're thinking to yourself, Ryan, what does it matter? They're a MAC team. I'm just saying, I'm telling you, the coaching staff appreciates that Miami plays Cincinnati the week before they play Minnesota, essentially meaning that Miami of Ohio can't really hide anything, because Cincinnati's a very good football team with Luke Fickell at the helm there. So Minnesota's going to be able to get a good scout on what's going on there. Now, I think Minnesota obviously wins this game. I think you're going to see an incredibly boring vanilla game where Minnesota's just going to say, Miami of Ohio, let's see if your front seven can beat us, because I don't think they can. And you're going to see Mo Ibrahim and Trey Potts and Cam Wiley get a ton of touches. I'd say Minnesota puts up over 250 yards on the ground, and we'll see if they can't get something through the air. But I think Minnesota wins this game something like 31-14. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to be closer than you like for most of the game as this offense continues to kind of work out its kinks. But I also believe in Minnesota's defense a lot more than I think some people do, where I think they can be a competent group, unlike last year. And I don't think that Miami's offense is really anything to be afraid of. So I'm going to say 31-14, Minnesota gets their first win.
All right. September 18th, the Gophers travel to Colorado. This will be against a Colorado Buffaloes team that I think surprised some last year. If memory serves, Ryan, Michigan State's coach, whose name is escaping me, was there.
Mel Tucker
was there the year before. So this was the first year he had vacated Colorado. And I think they had a number of transfers, if memory serves, and their expectations were fairly low, but they actually performed much better than expected. I'm sure you'll touch on this. They are losing a quarterback to injury. It was a quarterback competition, but many think that quarterback actually was going to win out. So they're maybe going to be playing their second string quarterback. Generally speaking, I know you've noted this before, but in my notes, you know, the Pac-12 has struggled, especially against power running teams. I know they have a very strong linebacker at Colorado, but should be interesting. Always good to get an early road test, especially against the Power 5 team in Colorado. At the end of the day, I am going to pick the Gophers here to win on the road. I think it'll be very close, maybe like a 27-24 kind of ball game. But I will take the Gophers to win.
Yeah, this is your first toss-up. Essentially, I mean, it's more of a 50-50 or a 60-40, whichever way you want to look at it. And to Luke's point, I mean, I just don't trust Colorado's passing game. Now, the nice thing for Minnesota here is the week before they play Colorado, Colorado heads down to Denver, and they get to take on the SEC's team, Texas A&M. So it's not going to be a cupcake the week before, so we'll see how Colorado kind of emerges out of that injury-wise. But, I mean, they have a really, really good running back. Jarek Broussard was the Pac-12 player of the year on offense last year. They have a very good linebacker, as Luke said as well. But, I mean, I think such a large part of the game of football comes down to how good your quarterback is that week. Now, their second team all Pac-12 quarterback, Sam Noyer from last year, transferred to Oregon State. Now, some would say that's a decision, and I would tell you, I don't know that was a wise decision, but he's gone. Their probable starter in JT Strout, as Luke said, there was a competition that, you know, they said it was, I think many people thought Strout would imagine from it or would emerge from it. And he suffered a knee injury a couple weeks ago, and he's going to be out. So Minnesota gets to face your favorite player, Brendan Lewis, who has attempted 10 total passes coming into the season. Now, like I said, I mean, if you're Colorado, you're just going to try to do this thing on the ground. And Minnesota sucked on the ground last year. Their run defense was atrocious, especially against running backs. And I think ultimately this game comes down to this. Do you think Minnesota's offensive line can be physical up front and open holes for Mo Ibrahim? And do you think Minnesota's front seven can be more physical than Colorado's and kind of shut down the running game to an extent to force something called Brendan Lewis to beat through? Now, I think Minnesota, especially with this injury to the quarterback, I think they should probably be a slight favorite in this game. I think they end up winning this game something like 24-21 or 27-24, 27-21, somewhere in there. Because I just trust the physical nature of an experienced line on both sides to be able to get it done on the road. That's just kind of the way I'm at. Because, you know, I've seen in recent years Flex kind of this running game go against teams not from the Big Ten in terms of, like, you saw what Minnesota did to Auburn or you saw what they did to Georgia Tech. Now, they haven't played, I don't think, outside of Oregon State and Flex first year, a Pac-12 team in Flex tenure. But I just think this defensive line is going to create more havoc than people think, and they're going to be better against the run than what I think some people think. That I think Minnesota does win this game, and they're 2-1 in the year. Where do you stand?
Yeah, so I gave that there, you know, the Gophers will win. Here's one thing in my research that I found really interesting, and this is only interesting because 247 is owned by CBS, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So 247, CBS, your employer maybe, your employer, they actually have the line for Colorado at over under at 4.5 wins, and for the Gophers at 7, and this
Colorado's only expected to win 4.5.
Yeah, games. But guess what? So then they pick the game, right? And they're trying to get you an idea.
And Colorado to win.
They pick Colorado to win. I found that really interesting. So they either are thinking that the
hell is Colorado's schedule.
So okay, so their wins here are their wins: Northern Colorado, Minnesota, Arizona, Oregon State, and then losses to Texas A&M, Arizona State, USC, California, Oregon, UCLA, Washington, and Utah. Now, don't get me wrong. Washington, Oregon, A&M.
I mean, predicting to beat UCLA but not Minnesota
That's
a decision.
Yeah, that was, I was a little perplexed by the specifically the USC one.
Well, you look at the game from in this game even in terms of what the
even Cal,
is.
Right? Like, I was a little like Cal's maybe a 6-6 team. That's my amateur opinion, but like I don't know, man.
Well, I look at this where this game is scheduled. Like Texas A&M is preseason number 6 in the country. Then you have Minnesota, and then you have two top 25 games after Minnesota in Arizona State and USC. They think a 4.5 win Pac-12 team. Okay. Well, I guess there's a reason why Vegas has as many big hotels as they do and as big casinos as they do. Would it surprise me if Colorado won this game? Certainly not.
Yeah.
I just think that this is probably a 60-40, 65-35. The more I've kind of just prognosticated about it, I just think the physicality of Minnesota is going to be too much for Colorado in the end, whether that's on the offensive side or the defensive side. And you'd hope, especially by this game, what's the date on this game? Like the 18th?
It's the 18th of September, yep.
You'd New hope kickoff. Whatever Ottman Bell's injury truly is, he is as close to 100% as he's going to be for this game. So then maybe Ottman Bell's back and this passing game can also get a boost.
Yeah, and the thing is like, Colorado's, I'm not saying they're a bad team.
No, they're not.
I think their head coach is like Doral or, I think that's Carl his last Doral. Name. I know he was the Pac-12 coach of the year last year, and probably rightfully so, right? The thing is, I don't see how you pick a team to, if you're advocating on this article to take the under at 4.5 wins, that Minnesota's one of them, and then the alternative article, I guess they're different authors, for Minnesota is 7 and you're taking a push, like I don't get the logic there, but not my job. Should we get to Bowling Green again, or you got
we should left? But that's just again the quarterback situation. I mean,
right,
you know, Sam Noyer was the second team all Big 12 or Big 12, Jesus, Pac-12 quarterback, and he's out.
Mm-hmm.
Second projected starter, JT Stroud, he's out. Like, I don't know, man. Like, they have Nate Landman as that stud linebacker for them.
Mm-hmm.
But he's coming off an Achilles injury, too. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to stick with my pick. Let's move on to a horrible Bowling Green team.
Yeah, Bowling Green's not going to be great. The over-under that I can find for them is literally 1.5. So I'm going to take the Gophers to win and win handily. This is homecoming. It's a September 25th game. Hopefully Huntington Bank Stadium will be rocking. I'm going to quit saying Huntington Bank Stadium, just going with the bank will be rocking. I hope that this is the latest date we might see Ottman Bell. I hope that he can play sooner, obviously, but we're going to need, at least one game under the helm where he can get into things, assuming the injury isn't as good as PJ's letting it out to be. And he can be back getting into the big stretch of the Big Ten. So I'll take the Gophers here. So at this point I have the Gophers at 3-1 through the first four.
So yeah. And that's where Bowling Green, to give context here, I believe, as Luke said, I think their over under is 1.5 for this year.
Right.
They're a bad football team. Since Dino Babers left to go to Syracuse, they are a combined 12-41. They went 0-5 last year, and they were outscored 225-57. The team that struggled immensely on offense, and they lost their three best players, or skill position guys, and Andrew Clare, Bryson Denley, and Quentin Morris. And it's a defense that, you'll like this stat, Luke. Can you, in their 5 MAC games last year, how many rushing yards per game do you think they gave up?
Whew. How many rush? Maybe a better question. Was it better or worse than the Gophers rushing defense last year?
They were probably similar.
Okay.
And
so
that
probably
should tell you everything you need to know.
Probably like 195 a game.
They averaged against their run defense over 300 yards on the
ground. Oh, my goodness.
So you know what Minnesota's going to do?
Yeah.
And they're just going to run inside zone for 45 plays, and they're going to beat Bowling Green 38-10.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about the Falcons taking flight in this game. I'll tell you that much. So that's where I have Minnesota 3-1 at the end of September, along with Luke, and that gets us to October.
Okay, so just for September, I think from basically a floor to ceiling perspective, I think the floor for the Gophers here, barring some injury, is 2-2, with the ceiling really being 3-1. I just don't see a situation where the Gophers win that game. I'd love them to win that game. I'd love the ceiling to be 4.
Look, it's college football, Luke. I mean, there's a ceiling where they are 4-0.
Yeah. Okay.
Like it's not the craziest thing I've ever heard. It's like it's the ceiling. I also think, I mean, if you want to talk about the floor, I think 1-3 could be the floor. If like something crazy, like you lose to Ohio State, Miami of Ohio, you take an L somehow.
Yeah.
And then Colorado, you take an L. I don't see a plausible way in the world they lose to Bowling Green. But
yeah,
I don't think the floor or the ceiling are incredibly likely.
Yeah.
I think 3-1 is certainly the most likely to me.
I'm with you on 3-1. I think.
But it also wouldn't be a surprise if they did drop the game to Colorado and they're 2-2.
Yeah. Yeah, so. It's reasonable. So let's jump into October.
Did we mention off the rip that the over-under for this is mainly 7, maybe 6.5 if you can still find it. So essentially
mostly 7 is what I can find. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we're 3-1 going in October. Go ahead.
Okay. So October 2nd, an 11 a.m. kick in West Lafayette against Purdue. Holy moly, Ryan, what's happened at Purdue? I think that's where we have to start. Jeff Brohm, like, was rumored to be going back to Louisville, ended up staying, got a huge, huge contract, in my opinion. And since that huge contract, has really struggled. They're obviously David Bell's legit, right, at wide receiver. Outside of that, remind me, I think they have a defensive tackle that's pretty good. But other
than
that,
he's gone now, and Lorenzo Neal.
He's gone.
They have a defensive end who's pretty good.
Okay.
George Karlakis.
I should have been reading that. So
yeah.
But generally speaking, this is a team that could not run the football last year. Like for anything, they found a way against the Gophers.
I don't know if it's could or see. Here's the thing. I think Purdue just chooses not to.
Okay.
Like, could they run the ball? Maybe. Do they choose not to? Correct. Like they have the Xander Horvath thing.
Yeah.
You know, the big gigantic 6'2", 240 kid. Who they use as their running back.
Mike Allstott 2.0.
Yeah, and that's where they just, like, they'll give him, like, 15 carries, and then they'll just throw the ball 45 times.
But here's the thing that we really have to talk about. Jeff Brohm is so weird in how he uses his quarterbacks. Like, he benches them and, like, gives them no ability to get confidence. It's odd.
So do you subscribe to the theory that if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks?
Well, that's a good point. It might be. I might subscribe to that theory.
Do you want me to take you back to the Philip Nelson / Max Shortell / Mitch Leidner years?
Yeah. Well, frankly speaking, I wish they would have just been able to stick with Philip Nelson, but that's not here nor there. But generally speaking, I think that Purdue has kind of been trending downward. Obviously, no Rondell Moore. They are going to be, I'd imagine, quite salty in the way that game ended last year. Wasn't it like a pass interference?
Was like a controversial call.
Yeah.
That it was a push off, which it was a push off.
Yeah.
Got called PI, and on the next play,
Minnesota
Saint
picks
Paul
out the
zone.
Ball.
Josh Ani gets the interception.
Yeah. But I mean, so they may be salty about that, but relatively, PJ's kind of had their number in his tenure here. I don't have it in front of me, but they won last year. I believe they won the year before. Was it two
Correct.
Years ago? Two yeah. years ago, they won in that really cold game. Did they win at? Yes. And then they won in 2019, obviously.
They won the last 3 years.
Yeah. They won the last three. I think I'm going to take this as a win. Purdue into this season, like, let me just look quick. Their over-under is 5. I'd be tempted to bet the under on that personally.
I think it's a good number for them. I you know, like, Purdue's a weird team because
yeah.
I think by now in the Jeff Brohm tenure at Purdue, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get they refuse to try and establish the running game, probably because they don't have any running backs anymore because they all just transfer out because they know Purdue's not going to run the ball.
And can't recruit
them. So you have two running, or you have two quarterbacks. You have David Bell, who's a tremendous guy. I know that they think highly of Milton Wright as well. And then we mentioned they're going to sprinkle in Mike Alstott 2.0 and Xander Horvath on the ground. I just like defensively, they have, you'll like this one, they have three co-defensive coordinators. Like what?
Seriously?
What? Three of them. They have three co-defensive coordinators.
There's a lot of this weird stuff happening in college football these days. Like titles matter so much to these guys, it feels like.
Yeah, it's strange. But all I know is Purdue's defense has been below average. Purdue lost their best defensive tackle in Lorenzo Neal. They lost their best linebacker in Derek Barnes. They lost arguably their best defensive back in Brendan Tynaman. And yeah, they get George Karlafkas back. But like, they couldn't get after the passer last year. They ranked 126th in sack rate. Essentially, you had all day to throw. You had all day to do anything you wanted back there, and they also couldn't stop the run. Like, I think this game, there's going to be a lot of points. You know, I just think, like, this is like another 35-31 type of game. But I trust Minnesota to get it done because they've gotten it done the last three times against Purdue, especially the last two games that were close games, 19 and 20, where Minnesota found ways to win and Purdue didn't. So I just think, like, everybody knows. Here's what I'll say is I'm going to be curious how opposing defensive coordinators try to combat Purdue this year because it's not a novelty anymore. Like, Purdue is obviously a very different offense than anything else in the Big Ten West. And while Minnesota has struggled to contain them, Purdue has scored 31 or more points for the last 5 years against Minnesota's defense. Like, they're going to put up points for whatever reason Minnesota struggles to defend them. In that same respect, Minnesota has also won four of the last five games because they have scored 44, 41, 38, and 34 points against Purdue. And now Purdue I believe they let go of their defensive coordinator following the 2020 season. Now they have three co-coordinators. They lost some of their best players on defense. I just think Minnesota can find another way to get it done in West Lafayette in something like a 35-31 type of game. And you're talking about 4-1.
Okay, let's get into Nebraska, October 16th. Please note here that between the October 2nd and October 16th game is a bye week for the Gophers. So the Gophers will be going into the Nebraska game following a bye. This will be a home game at the bank. If you're on Gopher Illustrated, if you're on Twitter, you know how much the collective Big Ten dislikes Scott Frost in Nebraska. And basically Nebraska's fan base for claiming that they saved the Big Ten football season last year. But generally speaking, PJ has had Nebraska's number for the most part. They did have a big loss 1 year at Nebraska that I think was actually the Tanner Morgan coming out party because Zach Anik said went down for injury.
It wasn't more so the coming out party, more of was sent to the emergency room at halftime.
That's a good point.
It was necessity time for him.
Basically, he just played, and that's kind of the springboard for his career got started. Nebraska coming into the season, over-under is 6 wins for them. Similar to how I stated with Ohio State, I'm not going to bet against PJ Fleck and Scott Frost until Scott Frost can prove it to me. I'm kind of hoping for some cooler weather so we can see if anybody wears hooded sweatshirts out to warm up. But generally speaking, I will take Minnesota to win this game against Nebraska.
So Nebraska's... Do you hear any of Scott Frost's most recent press conference?
I literally have.
Or did you hear about it?
I'm not joking right now. I have muted the two words on Twitter, Scott Frost, combined. Yeah. Like, I've gotten so sick of it. I understand, and I do think it's funny, and he's kind of his own worst enemy. By the way, is it true that they're currently under investigation?
Yep, they got some sanctions potentially weighing against them. And it's just like, I feel like every offseason now, there's something happening with Scott Frost and this team. Like, the reality is, it's going to be a defining year for Nebraska. And I mean, they had another eventful offseason. It's where Scott Frost's most recent press conference lasted like 5 minutes, and everything ended with something resembling, like, can't wait to play the game on Saturday. Well, it's a good thing Nebraska's got like one of the toughest schedules across the Big Ten, if not the country, again this year, right? For a team that's trying to make its first bowl game. So I think it's interesting when you look at this game where the four previous games for Nebraska, and it's Oklahoma, of which they tried to get out of on the road.
Yeah.
Then you head to Michigan State, which I think Michigan State is a better football team than what people think this year. But that's here nor there. And then they come home for two tough games against Northwestern and Michigan. Now, I say tough. We'll get to Northwestern. I don't know if it'll be necessary. Like, here's the thing with Nebraska. They find there is, I don't know, a team in the last couple of years that can find a way to lose a game more often than Scott Frost Nebraska team. Like, all you have to do is look back to that Minnesota game last year.
Right.
Like, I know Fleck likes to overdramatize that game where, you know, he's like, it's one of my favorite games ever. Meant so much to me. And, you know, Minnesota had like something like 30 guys out between COVID and injuries.
Right.
Like, Minnesota had no business winning that game. And why they didn't is because the Nebraska coaching staff just punted in terms of, here are the stats, Luke. Like, they lost the game, Nebraska did, averaging 5.5 yards a carry with 36 carries.
Right.
Because they decided, you know what? Oh, it's working on the ground. We're just going to try to force it through the air.
Yep.
3.8 yards per attempt through the air. That's horrible. Mm-hmm. Absolutely horrible. Like, they couldn't find a way to beat that Minnesota team last year, and all they had to do was run the ball, and they couldn't do it.
And the thing is like, even coming into the game, right, there was everybody in the conference knew Minnesota couldn't stop the run. So why would you throw the ball, like, even consider that as a strategy?
It was absolutely mind-boggling to me at the time, still is mind-boggling. Now, another reason why I'm not high on Nebraska this year, besides that schedule, I mean, we talk about those four games, and then they get Minnesota, who has a bye week to prepare for them. They get, like, Iowa, Ohio State, and Wisconsin in, like, the last four or five games. It's brutal. But, like, the quarterback position for Nebraska, like, Luke McCaffrey's no longer there. I think he transferred to now as, like, fourth different school of the offseason. I think he's ended up at Rice now. So you're talking about the Adrian Martinez show. Adrian Martinez, incredibly promising as a freshman in 18, took a step back in 19 because of injury, and 2020 he was an L. I mean, there's just no way to get around it. And now they don't have Wandale Robinson, and I think Nebraska fans would tell you Samari Toure, the FCS All-American from 2019, is going to help. But also they had like something crazy, like 7 or 8 pass catchers transfer out. So how in the world are they going to move the ball through the air? Because I know I watched Adrian Martinez last year, and that thing wasn't pretty. The pass, I mean, how are they just going to complete the forward pass? And the fact that Minnesota gets a bye week before Nebraska, while Nebraska's got to play Michigan, and Minnesota gets this game at home, I don't know what to really think of Nebraska this year. Because I think if Nebraska somehow figures out a way to win 7 games, that's a great year for Scott Frost. I mean, that schedule is very daunting. Mm-hmm. But in that same breath, I could also see this go pear-shaped, and they're sitting at like 4-8 at the end of the year. A brand-new athletic director is looking at a show clause, trying to get out of the contract and the buyout because of the NCAA potential sanctions, and they blow this thing up. I don't know what to expect. Like, I think Nebraska's defense has improved. But I also think Nebraska has really struggled to stop a Minnesota offense on the ground the last 2 years. And I don't know that I see that changing. So, again, I think if you were to ask Nebraska, like I saw our Nebraska site, I think it was Brian Christofferson predicted this as a win for Nebraska. And could I see it? Yeah. Do I think that's the likely outcome, especially with Minnesota getting a bye week beforehand here? No, I don't. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Minnesota gets this game at home, no, I don't. Like, I think Minnesota wins this game, and Minnesota is sitting at 5-1.
All right, this kind of starts this next game, October 23rd against Maryland, kind of starts the interesting stretch for me.
So we're both at 5-1.
We're both at 5-1. I think this is traditionally, and we haven't talked. Usually we talk more about this before we do this. This is traditionally where I think we deviate. Obviously, Northwestern, you and I have gone back and forth for years about Northwestern. We'll get into that one. But, okay, Maryland, October 23rd.
The next two games here are like kind of where, like, if this season's going to be 9-3 versus 7-5 versus 6-6, I think almost like the next three games for Minnesota kind of dictate that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's very possible that Purdue can be better than we thought they were. Nebraska can be much improved. I'm not trying to belittle that, but just on paper, this to me is the important three-game stretch. It's going to be kind of the defining, you know, what's the trajectory of the season? You know, as we talk with Derek
all
the time.
Well, I don't know that this is the three. I mean, you end the year with three probably ranked teams.
Well, you have to be in a position going into November
to
put yourself in a position to succeed.
The final six games are very important. Yes.
Yes, they're very important. And I mean, every game is important in college football, which is largely what makes it so fun. But okay, so.
But yes, this determines whether the final three games are Big Ten West title implications or here we go again implications.
Yes, right. Okay, so Maryland. Give me one word response answers to these. Is Maryland a talented football team? Like skill wise?
Maybe.
I would argue that traditionally they are skilled.
Traditionally they are.
They're very skilled. Is Mike Locksley like?
No, he's not a good coach. I don't think he is. I don't.
Those are like, the two things you have to balance here. Cause here's the thing. Maryland is kind of binary in my opinion. They either hit or they miss, right? Regardless of Mike Locksley. And I think he has what can kind of bring them down a little bit. But PJ's had some, like, 2020. They should have won that game. They lost.
I mean, you're up three scores in the fourth quarter and you found a way to lose it.
2019, I know the Gophers won. They had a huge win, right? 52-10. 2018, though, they lost that game.
They got their teeth kicked in by DJ Moore.
2017, they lost that game with interim head coach. I believe it was what's his name?
Tracy Pledge?
No, this is 2017. This is PJ's first year, and I'm almost certain of that. What was the interim coach's name? Matt Canada. He's now isn't he the offensive coordinator for like the Steelers now? But regardless, all to say, PJ hasn't had a ton of success against Maryland. So
it's a weird game.
Yeah.
I mean, it is because like, okay, let's look at the this game for Maryland is sandwiched in between five ranked games. So they have Iowa and Ohio State to lead off October. Now, Maryland gets a bye week before playing Minnesota. But then after Minnesota, they've got Indiana and Penn State. So, like, where is Maryland going to be at? And in that same breath, is this the year, like, Minnesota, like, again, we talk about 2019. Minnesota beat the piss out of them, 52-10 at home.
Yeah.
And then last year, you're up three scores in the fourth quarter, and PJ has more confidence in a defense than he should ever have, and Minnesota loses that game. So, I mean, say that just the play calling and the aggressive attitude would have been competent last year, and Minnesota hangs on to win a three-score fourth-quarter game. I mean, here's where I'm at. Like, I think Jake Funk, the Maryland running back last year, who I think is now battling for a Charger spot, he's gone, which is really good because I think Jake Funk's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it also depends. What do you think of Taulia Tagovailoa? Because Minnesota made him look like Michael Vick.
Yes, he was good.
But, like, overall, he wasn't. Like, seven touchdowns, seven interceptions, ran with his legs some.
Right, but in that game, he was
amazing. As many Gopher fans saw.
Yeah.
But, like, he wasn't the next coming of Michael Vick. But then I, like, look at the skill position players, like they lost Jake Funk, which sucks. And they'll have to figure out the running game. But like Dante Dimas and Rakeem Jarrett, I mean, they have some competent pass catchers. But I also thought the interesting thing was you look at their offensive line. They had three starters transfer out to other teams.
Mm.
Like Marcus Minor transfers to Pitt. He had 17 career starts. Johnny Jordan transfers to Va-Tech. He was all conference a year ago. And then something called Tyron Hunt transferred to Old Dominion. So they're going to be breaking in some new starters along the offensive line. And then defensively, I mean, Minnesota's put up 52 and 44 points the last 2 years against them. That's where, again, I don't think Mike Locksley's defense is any good at all. I think Minnesota's figured something out against them, certainly.
Mm.
But I also, like, I don't know. I think Minnesota – see, this is where I haven't gotten – I'm halfway through, like I said, my season prediction article, and now I'm trying to figure out what I want to do.
Sorry that I made this a lot harder on you. I mean, honestly, I'm taking this as a loss. Because I feel like – In the 5-game stretch of Purdue, Nebraska, Maryland, Northwestern, Illinois, I just feel like to run that table and the way, you know, how challenging it is to win 5 games in a row, I had to find one to drop, if not two. And I feel like historically they've struggled with Maryland has been bad some years and then found a way to take Ohio State to overtime, right? Like they've found ways to you know compete, and I just feel like I had to pick one and I picked Maryland, which there's not a lot of basis behind that. I understand, but just historically, you know, PJ struggled a bit against Maryland. I'll take Maryland to win this game.
I can't pick Maryland to win this because I don't trust their defense at all. And then, I mean, I just need to like work my way through this thought process wise, because I've seen a Minnesota team score 44 and 52 points the last 2 years, and they've somehow only won one of those games.
Right.
And I think this defense will be improved.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll let Taulia run amok among them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like that this game's at home. I have to pick the win. I don't have to. I just think the rational thing for me is, again, this is another toss-up, as evidenced by Luke taking the Gophers to have an L here. I don't think Maryland is an incredibly imposing team. I think Minnesota catches them right in the middle of a gauntlet, which sees Iowa, Ohio State before them and Indiana, Penn State after them. And I understand that Maryland gets the bye, but I think Minnesota's figured out how to score on Mike Locksley. And a not good Minnesota offense scored 44 points on them without really doing anything in the fourth quarter last year. So
all right.
I'm going to say 6-1 and bowl eligibility in late October.
All right, so let's do this real quick. What do you think the over-under is for Maryland?
6.5.
It's 6. Now, I've looked around at a bunch of publications. Tom Fornelli, sure. that name ring true to you? Do you find him on Slack and message him frequently? Or
I've just listened to him on my drive back on the Cover 3 podcast. So
he is hard on the under for Maryland, and now I'm regretting my pick, but I'll stick with it. He has them only winning Howard, Kent State, and Indiana, and losing to West Virginia, Illinois, Ohio State, Iowa, Minnesota, Penn State, Michigan State, Michigan, Rutgers.
Yeah.
He doesn't think highly of Maryland at all. And that's fair. All right.
Again, I don't think Maryland is going to be as good as people think. And that's where I think I'd take the under on Maryland. And I think Minnesota catches them at a good time. Now,
so if you're a betting person.
Which I am, but.
But I'm just saying for the listeners.
Yeah, and that's where. Yeah, so I got them 6-1 after Maryland. You got them 5-2.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into Northwestern. Again, October 30th. This will round out the October games. This is at Northwestern. Obviously, I think it's safe to say that we think that Pat Fitzgerald might be the best coach in all of the Big Ten.
I think I would not disagree with you for what he has shown in terms of elevating a program like Northwestern to win. I think they've won the West like 3 of the last 5 years, but this year is going to be a little different, I think, for that Northwestern team.
Let's start with the over under here. The books have them at 6.5 wins. And Fornelli.
There's just no way they can be after, especially the most recent round of injury news.
This article was literally published.
When?
Oh, shoot. This one was in, I thought I had the one from today and it was in June. Never mind. We got to go way back.
Oh, there we go.
There you go.
I've seen the 6.5 number for Northwestern. And if you don't know what's happened at Northwestern since the end of last year, let me give you just a little brief statement. It's rough for them because they lost essentially everything. I mean, literally everything outside of Pat Fitzgerald. Peyton Ramsey, their all-conference quarterback, who I think elevated that offense just enough to help them win the West. He's gone. And now they're going to be starting Hunter Johnson and not the South Carolina transfer, Ryan Helsinki. Like, Hunter Johnson, you'll remember him, Luke. He started against the Gophers in 2019, and he was horrible.
Bad, yeah.
He was horrible. All right, so let's move to the running game. That's usually essentially what Pat Fitzgerald likes to do, is lean on his running backs. Well, their stud running back, Cam Porter, suffered a season-ending injury in fall camp. So that sucks. He was a really good freshman running back. Well, good thing they have other options, right? Drake Anderson, their second leading rusher, he transferred to Arizona because he knew Cam Porter was going to play. Isaiah Bowser, he transferred to UCF because he knew Cam Porter was going to play. You know who's probably going to get the bulk of the snaps for Northwestern this year? It's probably going to be Evan Hall, the Maple Grove native that Minnesota didn't offer. So it's going to be Evan Hall and probably a Bowling Green transfer by the name of Andrew Clare that we talked about earlier. So a little bit of difference in the running game. Okay, well, that's all right, Ryan. Sure ain't. Their top two leading receivers, actually, their top four leading receivers from last year, and Ramach Kyle Bowman, he graduated. Kyrick McGowan, he transferred to Georgia Tech. Their third leading receiver and tight end, John Rain, graduated. And then Riley Lees, their fourth leading receiver, he graduated as well. Their leading receiver from last year has 6 receptions. 6 of them. They have a total. I mean, it's something. Like, they got a transfer from Kansas who's, like, he's put up some numbers at Kansas, but it's also Kansas. I mean, I don't know what to tell you there. And then,
man,
losing.
I still see 6.5 wins almost most places. Like, I just don't get where they're getting this.
Because Pat Fitzgerald's a hell of a football coach.
No, I know. And I recognize.
Purdue isn't very good. And do you think Nebraska beats them? Like, let me continue to go through Northwestern here. Like Rashawn Slater, who opted out last year, he's now in the NFL. Gunnar Vogel and Nick Urban, 2 guys that started a lot of games for them, they're out. And then defensively, they lost their defensive coordinator who made that thing work for the last 13 years. He retired. But then they lost everybody else. They lost 2 all Big Ten defensive linemen. They lost their 2 stud linebackers who had played there forever, and Patty Fisher and Blake Gallagher. And oh, by the way, in the secondary, they lose Greg Newsom to the NFL. I think he was a first-round draft pick of the Cleveland Browns. They lost J.R. Pace, who was all-conference as well. They lost Cameron Ruiz, who was a good player for them as well. I mean, they just lose so much that it's like, this cannot be a year where Northwestern is – I just can't see them doing anything over 6 wins. I just can't.
Yeah.
Like, this has to be a closer to 2019 season, right?
Yeah.
It has to be.
It has to be.
I get Minnesota has this on the road, though, but, like, 6.5 wins is – if they somehow get to a bowl game, Pat Fitzgerald deserves an even longer-term extension.
I think if he gets them to a bowl game this year, like, an NFL team is really taking – They've taken hard looks before, but I think
you're talking about the Bears.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, at this point, like, there's going to be an NFL team that's going to be like, there's too much evidence here that this guy can just coach him up. Like, let's just get the best coach we can get. And he finally is like, my work here is done. I've been here for what? He's been there at least 15 years, right? This is totally off the top of my head.
I've had my opinion change on this. I think in the last year, I think Pat Fitzgerald just stays at Northwestern forever.
All right.
I do. But Northwestern's 2 previous games to this are Rutgers and at Michigan. So the previous week, they will be at Michigan, while Minnesota will be home versus Maryland. Again, Minnesota's got to go on the road to Ryan Field. It's going to be the day before Halloween. It's probably going to be a gross 45 northwest winds at 20-something mile-an-hour game. I just think Minnesota, like, this Northwestern team isn't any good.
Yeah.
Like, they won't be this year to me. I just don't see it. And it's probably, like, Pat Fitzgerald's teams are always fantastic defensively. It's why they're always so good. But, like, tell me, Northwestern going to score 20 points? Like, because I think Minnesota can score somewhere between 20 and 24 points. And I think this year, that's enough to beat Northwestern with how in shambles that offense is with all the new things that's going on.
Yeah.
Am I crazy for thinking that? Like, I'm not going to be outlandish here.
No.
And say Minnesota scores like 28 to 35, which I don't know where Northwestern's defense will be in terms of in late October, but I think 20 points is enough to beat Northwestern. So if you win 20 to 10, like, that's probably going to be my over under.
Yeah.
30 something points.
It feels 2019 ish, where, you know, offensively it was like, if they can score on defense, you know, they might be able to be in the game. Because I just trust Fitzgerald too much defensively because they just don't have it on offense, right? You talked me into it. I was going to pick Northwestern. I'm going to pick the Gophers.
Well, it's just like, I just, and I'm thinking of your favorite podcast, Their Eyes on Big Ten, where it's like everybody
my favorite. Northwestern. I listen to them, yes, but I wouldn't say they're my favorite. Most of my favorite podcasts aren't even sports podcasts.
Well, Greek likes the, you know, he tweets the gif of, I think it's, what is it, Northwestern, Minnesota, and the third team is accounting Northwestern is a win when they look at the schedule.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Right. Historically the last that's 5 accurate. Years, that'd be a horrible bet.
Yeah.
But look at that team and where it's currently situated with a brand new defensive coordinator, a brand new defense, essentially a brand new everything on offense. They lost so much. And tell me how this team is a West factor. Like, I don't see it.
Fair.
I don't see it. So I'm going to say this is another win, and it's 7-1 for Minnesota. I mean, in that theory, Luke, we'd be talking about a ranked team at this point because they would have rattled off 7 straight wins.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now that we're at the end of October, you want to talk about a ceiling versus a floor. I mean, you look at this, and I could see Minnesota 4-4. You know, if something were to happen, mm-hmm. as we talked about in September, where they lose to Colorado along with Ohio State. And then if you slip up against, I mean, Purdue or Nebraska or Maryland, I mean, you could be 4-4. Yeah. You also could be 7-1, 8-0. I don't think 8-0 is likely. I'll say again, I don't think they'd beat Ohio State, but
yeah,
I don't think the Big Ten West and those three teams we mentioned, Purdue, Nebraska, Northwestern, I don't think they're very good football teams this year. And I don't think Maryland out of the East for that crossover game is particularly a good football team as well.
Yeah. I'm with you.
And that's where it's given me like 2019 vibes in terms of like the schedule isn't crazy. Like, it's not crazy until you get into November here, because then the next game you get Illinois at home.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, look at the first, and we'll get into that game in a second here, but like, that's how you can get to this 8-9 win plateau where I'm obviously putting myself, because I mean, I have them 7-1. Mm-hmm. Going into November. And so for those of you who want to take that 7 number, you're already at a push. You already get your money back. And now we're just playing with fire,
yeah.
Playing with everything else. So
I have them, you know, I have them 6-2 at this juncture. The lone difference we have is the Maryland game. You know, from a floor perspective, I definitely can see 4-4 or even 3-5 happening. I don't believe that to be the case. I think that's the absolute
just how
floor.
How does it happen though? You know, like, this offense,
injuries,
just the defense just sucks again, which is it plausible? Yeah.
I think it happens.
No. Yeah.
I think from the outside looking in, what you say is Mo Ibrahim goes down. He's hurt, right? He can't go. But I think you and I both agree that this running back stable, they're better than just Mo Ibrahim, even though he's going to be that bell cow for them and that's who they're going to ride. Like, it's not going to be the dog sitting in the fiery room, right? Meme. It's going to be okay. It's not going to be great, but it's going to be okay. They'll be able to
service it. It's going to be fine because you still have an offensive line that's got over like 9,000 career snaps coming into this year.
Yeah. You know? But that's where I think you get to the, like, okay, how you get here is Mo Ibrahim gets injured. And, but I don't think that's reasonable. I think 4-4 is probably the more accurate floor, with 3-5. And then obviously the ceiling 7-1. I just don't see, them going unblemished through October.
Yeah. So let's get into November here, which is ultimately going to determine.
This is the meat and potatoes of a Big Ten football schedule, right? This is where Derek Burns has told us numerous times, this is where you kind of define your season. Hopefully you're playing meaningful football in November. Hopefully it's for something. Hopefully you're vying for a Big Ten West title. Obviously that's what the Gophers want. And they're going to start with Illinois at home. This is going to be an Illinois team with new head coach, Brett Bielema, a familiar foe for many Gopher fans, having been the head coach at the University of Wisconsin for many years. This is a struggling Illinois team. Generally speaking, I think on paper that this is an easy win for the Gophers. That said, this is a good offensive line coming back. I think Illinois might surprise some people. I think they're going to be.
I think Bielema is a much more competent coach than Lovie Smith is, which is, like, I've seen the number of 3.5 for Illinois this year.
I take the over.
I think they're a 4 or 5 win football team.
Yeah.
And a bowl game wouldn't surprise me. They have the most super seniors, I think, in the country, at like 22 super seniors that they were able to bring back. So you're talking 6th or 7th year guys. Like, I think 2022 is going to be much worse for Illinois than this year will be. Like, it's going to be almost like Arkansas, like where Arkansas last year won some games and Sam Pittman had a lot of seniors and was able to do that. And now this year they're going to be rebuilding. Well, I think for next year for Illinois, they're going to be losing a ton. And that's where I think Illinois fans, if they win 5 games or 6 games or 4 games this year, it's like, okay, you know, that was fine. But I think that's going to be a little bit worse next year is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I have a hard time picking a win here
for Illinois. You think Minnesota loses at home to Illinois?
But I hesitate a lot more than I probably would. If this was Lovie Smith, I mark this down as a win. But I struggle with the fact that I want to see the Gophers be able to stop the run. And I just feel like Illinois bringing back a good offensive line, having Brett Bielema at the helm, having some competence there, he can probably shape up a reasonable defense. I think competent coaching is going to bring them a long way. I'm going to pick Minnesota, but I really hesitate. I do hesitate on this one because I feel like this could be one of those games, especially if you're playing really well, it could be kind of one of those trap ones, looking into the future and seeing, you know, 3 big, you know, season defining games against Iowa, Indiana, and Wisconsin. So I will pick Minnesota here.
I could see the look ahead angle where they get caught looking ahead, especially feeling themselves if they're my scenario and they've won 7 straight and you're looking ahead. You know, maybe they're thinking about deer in a tree stand because it'll be deer opening weekend for those of you that are going to put on the blaze orange. And hopefully by then I've got my 150 incher on the ground. But like, I think you made a lot of valid points, and I think we're higher on consensus than Illinois, which is why I think we'd both take the over on the 3.5 for them. But in that same respect, you look at the last decade or last couple decades of first year head coaches in the Big Ten, and their records suck, and they suck for a reason. And like, I think Illinois is competent, especially offensively, as you mentioned with that offensive line. When you look at guys like, I mean, I'm not going to even try and pronounce this name, but, Big Kurt, please excuse me. I think it's Alex Paulszewski. And then you have a ton of starts on the offensive line. I think they have competent running backs, especially with like Chase Brown, Mike Epstein. You know, I think guys like that, they're fine. Plus you get Chase Hayden and Max Rosenthal that are coming in. I think the pass catchers is going to be the question mark because they moved their stud, or what they thought was going to be a stud quarterback, in Isaiah Williams to wide receiver. It was kind of a situation where they took him as a quarterback, but everybody was like, I think he's really going to be a wide receiver, which is what schools like Alabama and other ones were offering him at. So how can that transition go? Because they did lose a lot. And I mean, they lost Josh Immerte. Whoa. Not going to try and pronounce that one. I'm going to sound like Luke Buehler. But can they find pass catchers? Like, is this the year Luke Ford can do anything for them? Transfers back from Georgia was a big get at the time. Can him and Daniel Barker provide anything? And then defensively, they were horrible last year. They averaged nearly 35 points a game against them. They're transitioning to a 3-4 defense this year. I mean, the question is going to be, what can they get defensively? Brand new system, year one. Their stud defensive tackle and Roderick Perry missed the spring with an injury. They don't have a ton, I think, on the defensive line that really makes you stay awake at night. They still have Jake Hansen and Owen Carney at that linebacker spot. And then in the secondary, they lost Nate Hobbs, I think, to the Raiders, but that's still a secondary that can they elevate that from a bad defense to a below average? That'd be a great year one for them. So I don't think it's a look ahead for Minnesota. I think there's too much experience. And I think, a lot of these guys can look back to 2019 where they didn't screw it up in that October timeframe to kind of really springboard them into what is going to be an interesting, interesting game in Kinnick Stadium there. But I think it's a win. Again, they're at home. Mm-hmm. Illinois, two previous games before this. It's going to be at Penn State and versus Rutgers, where Minnesota – oh, boy, where are we at on the schedule? They get Maryland and Northwestern, so I think it's almost similar. I think Minnesota might have a slightly easier because of the Penn State thing there. But home game for Minnesota, first-year coach for Brett Bielema. Chugga-chugga. We're continuing the hype train. 8 straight wins, and you're looking at a top 25 matchup on the road in Iowa City, Luke.
All right, so Iowa.
You're 7-2. Yep. I'm 8-1.
Yep.
Your bettors have pushed. Mine have already cashed. Got it.
All right. Yeah. Your betters always do better. Well, that was weird. Okay.
I like that.
You do like that. So November 13th, Iowa.
How much time you got to have me spend in Iowa, Luke? I love talking about Iowa this year.
I don't think we needed to spend a ton of time on Iowa. I think the reality of the situation is that I think this is a pretty evenly matched game, assuming there isn't fallout on injuries for either team. Obviously, Iowa has Minnesota's number the last basically forever.
In the PJ Fleck tenure, they're 0-4, and Minnesota has not won in Iowa City since I was 7 years old, and the year was 1999.
Yeah, and the reality of the situation is the Gopher staff has had this game circled probably for a long time.
And the coaches.
Yeah, they all want this one really bad.
The question is going to be, do they get too overly hyped to try and get this monkey off the back?
I think the reality of the situation is, can they find a way to get a lead, right? And can they get Iowa out of their element? They haven't been able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, the last two. I mean, Iowa's game plans for these four games. I mean, Iowa's coaching staff has kicked the crap out of Minnesota's coaching staff. Game plan wise and execution wise. So, is it ever going to turn? And if it's ever going to turn, it just has to be this year. I just look at this Iowa team, and I've talked about it for weeks. I've talked about it on the message boards. I've talked about it on Gopher Illustrated, the Eyes on Big Ten podcast. I think Iowa's 8.5 number isn't the right number. I think the number should be 7.5 because I think 8-4 is much more likely than 9-3. And I look at this Iowa team and I have a lot of question marks. Spencer Petras was not very good last year. He was incredibly average. And now he loses Amir Smith-Marset. Now he loses Brandon Smith. Now he loses Sean Bayer. They're all gone. Pass-catching options.
Yeah.
And I look at this offensive line, and I know that the Greek would disagree with me, but Alaric Jackson, 42 career starts, first team all Big Ten. He's gone. Cole Banward, all-conference second team last year. He's gone. Mark Kallenberger, all-conference last year. He's gone. Okay. We look at the projected starters for that offensive line. Tyler Lindenbaum is incredible. Or Linderbaum is incredible, I should say. First team all Big Ten. He's one of the best centers in the country. Well, they're one of the guys that they were counting on had the most Iowa injury in fall camp of all Iowa injuries. Kyler Schott, their projected starting guard, broke his foot jumping off a hay bale as he was baling hay at his family's Iowa farm, and now he's going to miss time to start the season. Now, is he going to be back for this Minnesota game? I would absolutely expect that.
I would hope so.
But You still have Cody Incy, who was all conference a year ago, but I don't think the world of Jack Plum or Nick DeJong at that offensive line. And I just think that the skill position players, now again, we haven't touched on Tyler Goodson. He's probably in the same tier as Mo Ibrahim. He's an incredibly talented kid.
He's probably 1B, right? He's probably 1B. Yeah,
they're both incredible running backs. I wouldn't fault anybody for putting Goodson over.
And when I say A and B, I mean they're on the same line.
Putting Mo over Goodson.
Yeah.
Like they're very good. They're very different stylistically.
Yep.
But Goodson's a very good back. And he's going to be, if Iowa somehow does find a way to beat that 8.5 number, it's going to be because of Tyler Goodson. Now, why I don't see it is who's going to catch the passes from Spencer Petras. Like, Nico Reganey ain't it, folks. I mean, he ain't it. Tyrone Tracy, I think, is going to be a good football player for them. I just don't think he's going to find that wide receiver one upside this year. And then you have Charlie Jones, who had no receiving stats last year. Like, I know some people are trying to count on him. And then I know Iowa fans are also counting on, like, Sam Laporta. Yeah, I mean, I think he can be a very viable player in that passing game for them. But, like, counting on Arlen Bruce and Keegan Johnson, which are 2 4-star guys, I hate counting significant things on true freshmen because you're going – because if you're going to make that bet, you're going to lose that bet more times than you're going to win that bet because there's still 18 – 19-year-old kids still adjusting to the speed of college. Now, my qualms essentially just kind of manifest themselves on the D-line. Because you lose a lot from a top 10 defense a year ago. And Davion Nixon and Chauncey Golston and Jack Heflin are 3 very, very good defensive linemen. Nixon was the Big Ten defensive lineman of the year. Golston was a first-team all-conference defensive lineman. And Jack Heflin is making waves now with the Green Bay Packers. And I think he's almost playing himself into a 53-man roster spot there. Well, you're replacing him with 2 people, I think, if you've been following Gopher recruiting for a while, his name should be pretty familiar to you, and Noah Shannon and Y.A. Black. Noah Shannon was a Minnesota commit at one time, flipped to Iowa. Y.A. Black from Marshall, Minnesota, chose Iowa over Minnesota. These kids are kids and haven't played a lot of snaps. And Zach Van Valkenburgh can't do it all. And I know, you know, Joe Evans can hopefully provide something as a pass rush. I just think that this Iowa offense can't do enough. And this Iowa defense goes back to a top 25, top 30 defense instead of a top 10 one. And while they have a good punter, a very good punter, I'm jealous of him, Torrey Taylor, and then obviously, you have really good return men as well there. I don't see it for Iowa winning more than 8 games this year. And here's the thing that people don't understand. Luke, what do you think of an 8-4 season?
I mean, I feel like that's above average football. That's a pretty
good
season. That's
a good year. That's like a borderline top 25 team type of year.
Especially if you're in the
totally
Big Ten.
Fine.
Especially if you're in the Big Ten. Yeah,
exactly. Because you're probably winning 5 or 6 games. But the last point I want to make is that schedule for Iowa ain't conducive either. Like, and that's kind of leading me into my pick here because I look at Iowa's schedule. They lead off with Indiana and Iowa State, 2 top 20 teams. They get Purdue. They get Wisconsin on the road. And then the week before, or the 2 weeks before they play Minnesota, they have road games in Camp Randall and road games in Evanston. Now, again, I think they probably go 1-1 in that split. I don't really know what to think of Wisconsin either at this point, but I think they beat Northwestern because I don't think Northwestern's much good this year. You know, I think Wisconsin beats them, but the point I'm trying to make here is that those are 2 tough games before they have to come home and play Minnesota. So when you look at this game, Luke, do you think that the streak continues of Minnesota going another loss to Kirk Ferentz and another loss in Iowa City, or do you think this is the year if Minnesota finally gets their first win against Kirk Ferentz?
You know, I've waffled on this. I think this is where Iowa and Minnesota are very similar. Big question marks at the pass catching position, right? I think the differentiation, at least for me, is where I understand you're down on the offensive line. You know, Iowa again and again.
I just don't you start doing this. I just don't think they have all Big Ten defensive linemen outside of Tyler Lindenbaum, and their tackles, I don't think are going to be Alaric Jackson.
Yeah,
good.
I'm not saying that.
I know
either.
Iowa fans don't think he's very good, but Nick DeJong is a walk-on, and Jack Plum's played his two career starts. And yeah. Jack Plum didn't grade very well last year, you know?
Yeah, I hear you on that. But also, like, they have found ways to be consistently good and consistently identify. Sure. Now, are they going to be as good as they were last year on the offensive line? Probably not, right? But I think they're going to be okay there. And I think Goodson's good enough. I think the question is, you know, they always are good at tight end. Are they going to have somebody there to be a pass catching threat? They have to find something in the pass game to complement the run game, because I think they're going to be strong there.
They just have to hope Sam Laporta and Tyrone Tracy and one of these freshmen can do something.
Yeah. And guys, I think the other difference is that I do think Minnesota is upgraded on the defensive line. I do buy into that theory. I want to see them be able to stop the run first. And then I think this is really kind of a pick 'em game, right? Because Minnesota obviously isn't as strong at receiver as they've been, but they are strong on the offensive line and how they run the ball. And it might come down to specialists, and that makes me weary, as probably it makes you weary. At the end of the day, I have a hard time picking Minnesota to win the game at home. I think this is the best chance they've probably had in the PJ Fleck era, and I'm going to pick Iowa solely on the fact that they just haven't been able to get that monkey off their back. And I don't know if I believe that PJ is going to change out of that trestle ball mentality. I mean, it's not just a pure talent thing. It's also, you know, taking the approach to the ball game and, you know, what is your game plan? And at this point, I think it's very close, but I give a slight nod to Iowa and they'll get the win.
Don't blame me one bit.
Okay.
I'm going to take the other side.
I know. You're going to take the win. I would love to see that, by the way.
I think this game is going to be a lot of fun. I think this game has a high probability of being a night game.
Yeah.
I think this is an old... Here's where I think... Where I think I have more confidence is Minnesota in the trenches. I trust Minnesota's offensive line more. And I know some people are going to scoff at this and tell me to go make some more of that maroon and gold Kool-Aid. I think Minnesota's D-line is better than Iowa's this year. And I think that matters in this instance.
I think this is
an incredibly close game. If Minnesota's coaching staff can just field a competent game plan, and if the players just can't be too juiced out of their minds to not execute their assignment, I think this is something like a 21-17 win, where Iowa's defense is still very good. And I want to make sure I make that part clear. I mean, I still think this is going to be a top 25 defense. But I just have more confidence that Minnesota is able to move the ball enough compared to Iowa's offense that they're able to do it. And it's 8-1 going into Indiana. You're 6-3. I'm 8-1.
Yeah. Here's the question I think you have to ask yourself in this game is, do you think that Iowa's defensive line, you know, as you've noted, maybe not
as
tilled.
Can they figure it out as the year goes on?
Exactly. If they can figure it out, I think this skews much more in Iowa's favor. If they don't figure it out, I think that needle turns towards Minnesota, because as long as Minnesota stays healthy, that's always the qualifier. As long as they stay healthy, I think that they have the advantage with that experience in the offensive line. And
if both teams are healthy, I mean, that's where you have to kind of have the simulation.
But the other thing is, like, I remember last year, Ryan, and Goodson didn't have holes to run in. He had like alleys, right? So we really have to believe that Minnesota has.
Yeah, and again, for those of you who don't think Minnesota can field an above average defense, I don't blame you. What you saw last year is what you saw last year, and it was bad. And I know from what I've seen at the practices I've been at, I think you're going to see an improved defense.
And you're not the only one that has seen that, right? There are numerous people, including, you know, the Big Ten Network, including local people here that have been skeptical. Like, there are a number of people that think the defensive line is going to be improved. So there's validity to that.
And I think an improved defensive line helps the linebackers.
Yes.
It helps, as Luke's favorite saying goes, a rising tide lifts all ships. And, I mean, I feel like... Again, so you're 6-3 right now?
I'm 6-3.
I'm 8-1.
And you're taking the under on Iowa. I would be really...
I think 9 wins the Big Ten this year.
Sure.
That's my hot take.
The Big Ten West. right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. In the West, I think nine wins wins it. And I think it comes down to the final year, the final game of the year between Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Okay. So let's get into Indiana. I'm going to start you with just a couple one word questions. Was Indiana a fluke or not last year?
Oh boy. I don't know. I can't give you an answer yet. I mean, again, I'm doing this before I've done all the research I want to do. I think they were a very good team last year. I don't know what they will be this year.
Our good friends that make t-shirts that, you know, were great to partner with us. They're big Indiana fans. They were fun to interact with. They are very high on Indiana, as they should be. But I'm telling you, man, I love what that defense was able to do, but you have to ask yourself.
I'm telling you right now.
You have to ask yourself, was it a fluke or not? And then number two, is Penix healthy or is he not? And I don't think we know either of those things yet. I think that defense can be really good. Even at Indiana, I probably skew towards a Minnesota win here.
I'm going to pick a loss. I shouldn't call it a letdown spot because Indiana's a projected top 25 team and Minnesota's got to play them on the road. I just think the emotional letdown is kind of in effect after what I project as a big win over Iowa for the first time. And again, Indiana is a very, very competent team. I think by this point in the schedule, Michael Penix is back and he's doing what he does best.
Mm-hmm.
Chucking it down the field and uses his legs. And I look at what they lost Stevie Scott, their running back to the NFL. It was all conference last year.
Rightfully
they're
so.
They're bringing in a grad transfer from USC who's rushed for over 1,000 yards in his career. They lost Watt Filer to the NFL.
They've recruited well.
They still have Ty Freifogel, who is the Big Ten receiver of the year, coming back. And plus, they bring in a couple of grad transfers from Texas A&M and Florida State. On defense, as Luke said, they were very stout when they needed to be. They were very much a bend-don't-break defense.
They're also a scoring defense.
Yeah, and they were very advantageous in terms of turning turnovers into points. And I think they're going to be able to figure it out at home. Indiana will against Minnesota. So I have them, what, is that 9-2? Got to be 9-2.
Yeah, you've got the Gophers 9-2. I have them 7-3. I'm sorry, 7-3 at this point.
7-4.
No, I picked them to beat Indiana.
Yeah, 7-4. Because you picked them to lose to...
I picked them to lose to Iowa, Northwestern, and Ohio State.
Right.
So, 7-3.
Okay.
No, 8-3. You're right. I'm sorry. Gosh, I can't do math. Boy.
It's all right.
That's my job is
do
like
it
math.
For a living.
Goodness gracious. All right.
I'm turned out four. I won't flex on you, little one.
So did I.
Last game of the year, Luke. Wisconsin at home for potentially all the marbles. What do you think? I mean... Minnesota gets them at home.
Okay,
I
mean, Mike. Okay, let me start with a one question for you. I got multiple one word questions for you. Wisconsin's the best defense in the Big Ten.
Yes. Well, I think in the West,
Graham Mertz is
average.
He's a top half quarterback.
Well, here, I mean, you'd be getting into a whole different discussion here because. I think the West comes down to what quarterback do you trust most? Because no one has a really good quarterback. Like you look at, I mean, we talk about Northwestern. They're Hunter Johnson. He's an L. You look at him, like Brandon Peters with Illinois. He's fine. Like, it's who do you trust most to me between Spencer Petras, Graham Mertz, and Tanner Morgan? I mean, to me...
Oh, that's a hard question to answer.
I don't know what to tell you, because the Tanner Morgan we saw last year wasn't that good. Tanner Morgan we saw in 2019 was a very good player. What version of the 2021 Tanner Morgan are we going to see? I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, Petrus is down weapons that he had last year. I'm not sure how good he is. Graham Mertz off schedule was horrific. On schedule was great.
The last four Big Ten games before he got to play Wake Forest. Like, yes.
Yeah.
He was outstanding against a cover two Illinois team that got dismantled. But then the next four games, including against Minnesota, he was not good. It was like 2-5 touchdown to interception ratio.
Yeah.
Like, what? And here's the biggest point with Wisconsin's offense. They don't have a generational talent running back again.
No, I agree with you.
And there's a reason they scored 20 points in three games last year and why they lost that many games. I mean, there's a reason for all that. So when I look at Wisconsin, they have a very good I cannot tell you how much I think the world of Jim Leonard and what he's got going there defensively. I think they are incredibly gifted at linebacker, incredibly gifted just overall in their defense. But as Wisconsin fans saw last year, what happens when your offense is a complete L and you can't move the ball at all? Your quarterback's struggling. Everybody's just selling out to stop the run, and you can't score any points. Now, that's the question. And the other one is Minnesota has not found ways to beat Wisconsin. They have had ample opportunities the last 2 years. I know they did it in 18 in Madison. But you look at the last 2 years, Luke, I mean, you had them in 19 at home for the West title, and you completely just crap the bed. You have that big Rashad Bateman touchdown, and then Wisconsin beats the crap out of you.
And they got
them on the ropes in Madison last year, and you don't find a way to do it. Are you going to find a way this year? I don't know.
I don't know either, man. Here's the reality of the situation. Against Wisconsin and against Iowa, this staff has struggled to, you know, I think they've gotten out-coached. Yeah.
They've been out-coached, out-schematicked, I mean, out-executed, however you want to look at it. I'm with you.
Yeah. I think that's the reality of the situation. I look at Wisconsin. I think that Minnesota could win this game. I do think they have the best defense in the Big Ten. I think that they are going to ride that. I do think Minnesota could win this game. But at the end of the day, I really struggle to pick Minnesota in this game. I want to so bad, but I struggle. So I'm going to pick Wisconsin and an 8-4 season, man. That is still a good season, but I think we got to get to the floor and the ceiling after you pick, because I think that's the real conversation here.
Sure. I have them losing to Wisconsin as well. And in my scenario, like I said, I think 9 regular season wins the West. I think Wisconsin wins this game. I think they then win the West. And Minnesota has another ample opportunity to win a West title slip through their hands at home. I have too much trust in Nebraska. Jesus Christ. I have too much trust in Jim Leonard's defense to figure it out against Minnesota, against Mike Sanford's offense. I get the games at home. I get this game would potentially be for Big Ten West implications. I think this is like a 28-17 game where what could have been again. And then, again, in that scenario, I got Minnesota losing the final two. You're at 9-3. I mean, you're still a top 25 team.
Yeah.
You're probably getting a Florida Bowl, which is another right step for this program. But to your point, what's the floor and ceiling? I mean, if things absolutely don't break well and somehow Minnesota just is a disaster in September and they go 2-2, and then October becomes a struggle, say they go 2-2, and then you look at November, and they just lose and they go 1-3.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 5-7 at that point. I think worst case is 6-6. I don't know. I mean, you could see it if the offense can't figure out in the passing game, special teams remains an L, and then the defense can't figure it out.
And the defense isn't improved, right? Like, because we're building in all these assumptions that we do believe the defense is going to be improved. And so you're saying 6-6 for a floor. I think 6-6, 5-7 is the floor, right? I think more likely 6-6 than 5-7. But in reality, I do feel like that's the floor. But I think we really have to talk about the ceiling. like if things click, because I know you're high on the defense. If they can stay healthy,
I just think the defense can bounce. Like in 2019, I think SP Plus had them as a top 25 defense.
Sure.
Last year they were low 60s, and that was being kind. And that's only because they figured it out in December against Nebraska and against Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I think if they can become a top 35 defense this year, and with the way, and I think 9-3, like where I'm at, is more of an indication of, I don't think there's a ton of great teams. Like the three teams I have them losing to in Ohio State, Indiana, Wisconsin are three ranked teams. I have them beating one ranked opponent in that entire schedule, and that would be Iowa. And that's where I'm telling you, I don't think Illinois is very good. Northwestern, Maryland, Nebraska, Purdue, Bowling Green, Colorado, or Miami of Ohio. That's a 9-3 year with one ranked win. And if you win, you want to get ballsy and win two ranked games, you're at double digit wins. It's essentially, do you think in year five, with all the returning experience they have, can they win the games they're supposed to win? And can they win a game or two that they're probably not supposed to win? And that's where you look at, you have two ranked games at home against Ohio State and Wisconsin. And you have two ranked games on the road against Iowa and Indiana. If you split, you're talking double digit regular season wins.
Yeah, I think that, you know, looking again towards the ceiling, you know, I think 10-2 is reasonable for a ceiling. 9-3 is probably more realistic where you're at, but I think 10-2 is reasonable.
I think the most likely outcome is 8-4. I think it's right where you have them.
Yeah.
I know Vegas would tell you it's 7. I'm happy for them, but we talked about the over-unders on a lot of these teams. If you just strictly go by the over-unders of just Minnesota's 7 win total, you'd beat Miami, Colorado, Bowling Green, Purdue. You're already at 4.
You got Nebraska, Maryland,
you'd be at 5. Yeah. Again, that's where you look at the over-under totals, and then you look at what Minnesota's win total is for the teams that they're playing against. You look at that 4-game stretch between Ohio State and Iowa. I think the highest win total there projected in terms of over-under is 6.5. And that's Northwestern, of which we don't understand that for.
Right.
So there's your 8 wins right there. And if you don't even win a ranked game, you're at 8-4. Yeah. You win one, you know, you're at 8, you're at 9-3, you win two, you're at 10-2. So I think the bottom line is, I mean, I think this is a year to get excited. And it's great because I think you're going to see a lot of packed stadiums. I think you're going to see a lot of good things going on. But if that ceiling is going to be attained, you need someone besides Chris Ottman-Bell in the passing game to step up. Is that going to be Daniel Jackson? Is it going to be Dalen Wright? Is it going to be Brevin Spanford? Is it going to be one of the freshman receivers? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then you need the defense to be you need them to be a top 35 unit, not even what they were in 19, just a top 35 unit, which is somewhere in between they were last year. And I think that's attainable. I mean, we'll see. Like I said, they don't have to win a ranked game, and they can be 8-4.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that points to, like, what could be a wild season in the Big Ten West and just kind of, like, some of the parity,
yes,
right? Like,
that's what I'm telling you. That's where I told you. I think 9 wins right. The Big Ten West.
Right.
And essentially, I'm telling you, I think Wisconsin is a 9-win team. And I think Iowa wins 8. And if Minnesota can get somewhere between that 8-9 number, that last game of the year for the Axe at the bank is going to be, I think, an incredible atmosphere, which is all you can. Yeah, I mean, all you can ask at the end of the day is to kind of put yourself in an opportunity to be there to try and get to Indianapolis. And again, I'm bullish on this team. And again, I think 8-4 is the most likely scenario, because the one I picked during this podcast, I went 9-3, probably a tad optimistic. They beat Iowa and Iowa City. But in that same breath, I cannot stress to you enough, on my entire 9 wins, I have one team that was ranked in all that. I think the schedule is very conducive for Minnesota to make a run this year, Luke.
Yeah, it should be a very fun season. One, it's going
to
be...
Do you know where you could head to cover and get all the coverage you could possibly want of such a fun season, Luke?
I've heard that there's this website called gopherillustrated.com. I think it's a part of the 247 network, and I think it's only 99 pennies to get started.
It's going to be a fun year. And I think, I mean, a lot of you took advantage of that promotion we did last week where it was 75% off for the season. I love each and every one of you. I know a lot of you have reached out and said, hey, big podcast listener. I mean, finally pulled the trigger. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And, at the end of the day,
I think it's going to be a really fun year to be covering this team.
Yeah. Your bread and butter is that site and you do a great job. Also, let's not undersell what a job that Ryan James does. So if you like Gopher basketball, he does a great job as well. So make sure
that the Pharrell Payne news.
Yeah.
And then Josh Ola Joseph's coming on campus here. We'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
Fun time.
Well, we want to thank everyone for listening again. We're excited to get this season kicked off. Come see us at the Goal Line Club tailgates. They're going to be a blast. Again, and you're going to
go listen to the Pair in the Spare podcast as well.
Yeah.
I just recorded that first episode today. Hopefully it'll be out by the time you listen to this on whatever
I'm going to totally
podcasting platform, except Apple Podcasts, because I think it's going to take 24 to 48 hours for us to get on there.
But I'm just telling you right now, I'm going to beat this episode is going to be up before that episode. Just after.
I fully believe you. And that one's just, I mean, today we talked more about we did talk Gophers, but like the weird Big Ten ACC Pac-12 Alliance thing and just a lot of Big Ten overall football talk. So it's a different flavor than this. And as Luke and I will tell you, this podcast is going nowhere.
Yes.
So I think we will do the Ohio State preview on Monday, Luke. Is that tentatively the plan?
I think Monday can be reasonable. Let's plan on Monday, Ryan.
And if anybody's going to be going to the fair, I will be there Monday, I think 10 o'clock with PA. So if you want to come see how ugly I am in person, you can come find me at the KFM booth. Other than that, Luke, I think I got to go mix another batch of maroon and gold color Kool-Aid, huh?
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, and go Gophers.